Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is storyteller Joel Ben Izzi, author of the new book, Dreidels on the Brain. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Too Jewish Mavina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinchinim, Bar El Kachar, and Leah Avuno, and our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Hanukkah is nearly here, beginning this coming Saturday night at sunset. Over the 8 nights of the Festival of Lights, Hanukkah represents an opportunity to renew our commitment to our Jewish identity. And an interesting key to this festival is the time of day, or rather evening. As you probably know, all Jewish holidays begin at sundown, but none are quite so night-oriented, not even Passover, as Hanukkah, bringing light into the season of the shortest days and longest nights of the year. Hanukkah is that rare Jewish holiday in which nearly all the observances are after dark. Sure, it's Hanukkah during the day, too, but it's the magical lighting of Chanukiyot, Hanukkah menorahs, or candelabra, each night of the long festival that add one more light every night. Well, that's the central observance of Hanukkah. We are commanded to fulfill the great mitzvah of Pirsomet HaNes, publicize the miracle of God's redemption at this time of year in those days long ago. And nothing does that better than lights burning brightly in the window, reminding us of the miraculous quality of God's help. Although considered a minor festival in a religious sense, in America, Hanukkah has become something quite major. In part, this is because of its proximity to that other end of the American calendar year holiday that everybody likes to celebrate so thoroughly. You know, Kwanzaa. Actually, in part, it's also because Hanukkah is a festival that celebrates religious freedom, the right to worship God as we choose. Without the events we commemorate at Hanukkah, the victory of the small Jewish guerrilla band led by the Maccabees over the mighty Syrian Greek army of the Seleucid Empire way back in the years 167 to 165 BCE, almost 2,000 years ago now, without that, the belief in one God would have been destroyed and religious freedom eliminated. There would have been no Judaism, which means no Jews, which also means no Christians, and no Western civilization, for that matter, and no Muslims, since both Christianity and Islam are direct daughter-descendant religions that come out of Judaism after the events of Hanukkah. The story of the Great Revolt, catalyzed by the egotism of King Antiochus IV Epiphanes and his need to be not only obeyed but worshipped, is an underdog narrative. It's a story about how a group of Jews refused to bow down to an idol or surrender their right to study Torah, to observe Shabbat, to educate their children in belief in God and the moral and practical principles of Judaism. They fought, died, and eventually triumphed. And when they recaptured the temple in Jerusalem, they cleansed it and relit the great menorah, that great symbol, and dedicated the temple anew to worship and holiness, a Chanukat Habayit, the very word Hanukkah, meaning dedication. So when we celebrate this coming week, eating anything fried in oil, especially latkes, the fabulous potato pancakes, we are celebrating something more than a children's holiday. We're enjoying our religious freedom, established nearly 2,200 years ago by the Maccabees, and religious freedom for all religions, for every religion, is a great Jewish ideal worth fighting for back in their day and right now in ours. To play us in this morning, we continue our pre-Hanukkah musical preview with the a cappella group 613. It's their setting of Hanerot Halalu. We light these candles for the miracles that were done for our ancestors at this time of year so long ago.
For the glow of the candles, for the warmth that they
give us insight for what has been in the temple, for the story we retell with pride, for the plight of our fathers, for the struggle endured to survive,
for prevailing where some would not have bothered, for enabling our people to thrive.
Anero halalu, anu madlikin, anu madlikin alanisin, for aiding our fight and the miracle of light that lasted eight nights and eight days. We say,
succession, to believe even when life is flawed. Maccabees, they fought for freedom and displayed why our faith is so strong.
He's there when you need him, so together we join in this song.
That was the Jewish a cappella group 613 and their version of Hanerot Halalu. These candles symbolize our miraculous redemption at this time of year long ago for Hanukkah, which begins this coming Saturday night. Only, I don't know, five more shopping days, not counting Shabbat. While we're on the subject of Hanukkah, our guest this morning on Too Jewish, the delightful storyteller Joel Ben-Izzi, has a fun and funny new book out called Dreidels on the Brain. Hear all about it when we return in just a moment on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give JETCO a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Lauriella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Joel Ben-Izzi, wonderful storyteller and author. He graduated from Stanford, traveled the globe gathering and telling stories. He has performed and led workshops in, you say 35 countries in your bio. I think it should be 36, which is twice times high.
I think so. And in fact, I need to update that. So I'll get right on that.
All right. He's produced a number of recorded collections of his stories, which have won a wide variety of awards, and then became an author, and we'll tell you sort of how that happened as well over the course of this interview. He has a wonderful new book out about Hanukkah. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Hey, good morning, Rabbi Sam. How are you?
I'm doing well. So tell us first, how'd you decide to write this new book?
Well, you know, Dreidel's on the Brain, it's a story that's been spinning in my head for 45 years now. And I've been kind of waiting for the right time to tell it. And some years ago on Rosh Hashanah, my wife said, "So are you ever going to write that story about snow and oranges, or are you just going to talk about it until you die?" So I thought, you know, I'd better write it. And a little prompt like that can help a lot.
Dreidel's on the Brain. I love that it's been spinning for 45 years, of course. You know, there's a wonderful opening in that in which you have this great device of someone trying to get a certain number of gimels in a row. Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's you know, when I was 12 years old, my life seemed like I was not liking it at all, and I was miserable with my parents, my family. My father was sick. We had no money, and I really wanted a Hanukkah miracle, and I kind of made a bet with God. I said, "God, if I can get four gimels in a row, I'll believe. I'm good. I'm ready to go." And right here, like right now, just before the first night of Hanukkah, as the sun was setting, and I spun, you know, because four is the way things happen, and, you know, we have four questions, four cups of wine. And so I spun and got a gimel and was impressed. And then I spun again and got another gimel and was more impressed. I spun a third time and got another gimel, and that was like magic, but it wasn't a miracle.
And then
I spun that fourth one, and the story takes off from there.
It's great, and you even calculated the odds, of course, being a 12-year-old boy, and, well, it's a great story. I want to note, you wrote this, and it's kind of adolescent literature, but the truth is, it's delightful for adults to read. That's a hard balance to strike, isn't it?
It is tough to strike, and I think a lot of it's better for adults. There was a lot of humor that works for adults that kids just won't quite get. The working title was Kvetcher and the Rye, but my publisher thought it was derivative, which of course it was. But you know what? Sometimes my editor would say, this is great, I love this, but there is the things happening to this poor 12-year-old kid, Joel, are just, it's just too much, it's too dark, it's too much suffering. And I said, that's how I felt at the time.
So does your editor know any other Jews?
Editor is Jewish, yeah. And she totally got it. She was worried about for the readers. But
of course.
What we did was we pulled back a few things that were just too dark, and then brought in a lot of humor, a lot of jokes, a lot of magic, a lot of Yiddish words, because it's really all about finding light within the darkness.
It's a wonderful, warm book, Dreidel's on the Brain. We'll talk much more about it with Joel Ben-Izzi when we return in a moment here on Two Jewish. I have to tell you, the original name of this show was Deli Home Companion, but the lawyers wouldn't let us do that either. So. Kvetcher and the Rye fits perfect. We'll be back in just a moment on Two Jewish. We welcome our friends from Free New Smoke, David and Pamela. You guys focus so much on your customers. Tell us why they're so important to you.
Our customers are extremely important to us. It's why we built this company. Our job is to get people to quit smoking, and we're extremely good at it. You can come in a very nice, comfortable lounge environment, try anything you want to try. You'll have knowledgeable and helpful staff that will be happy to get you or your family and loved ones to quit smoking.
We have four locations in Tucson, one in Catalina on the Pinal border, and our latest store has just opened in Sierra Vista.
And these are all lounges, sort of a comfortable environment for people to come in.
Yes, they're set up with couches and pool tables, pinball machines, video games, anything to help you along with your time.
What's the best way for people to find out more information?
They can go onto our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call our toll-free hotline for any information that you want, 1-800-705-7013.
And that number again is?
1-800-705-7013.
Thanks so much. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, twojewishradio.com, stream them there, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 nationally, according to Moment Magazine. And now in our ongoing Too Jewish effort to include the best of Jewish culture, well, kind of, with a lot of shtick, here is our top 10 list of the best Beatles Hanukkah songs of all. Number 10, She Loves Jews, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. Number 9, I Get By With Little Geld From My Friends. Number 8, I Wanna Hold Your Dreidel. Number 7, All You Need Is Geld. Do, 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 do. Number 6, 8 Nights This Week. Number 5, She's Got Some Presents to Hide. Number 4, I'm Just a Jealous Goy. Number 3, While My Shamas Gently Drips. Number 2, Hey Jews. And the number 1 best Beatles Hanukkah song, We're Salt and Pepper's Lonely Latke Band. Yeah, that was the top 10 list of the best Beatles Hanukkah songs for Hanukkah, the coming up this Saturday night for 8 crazy nights. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We talked last week about the recent election in Austria in which the far-right party lost badly, kind of an upset. That's not true in Hungary, where there's a far-right regime. Is the far right in Europe universally associated with extremism, with anti-Semitism, with neo-Nazism? Is that a fair association?
No, I think it's an association used by the press to sell more copy.
And maybe by their political opponents?
And I mean, even maybe, but even when you say a regime in Hungary, well, it's a democratically elected regime. It's a prime minister. There wasn't like a coup d'etat.
Right.
I mean, it's not like some other regime. It's the same regime with different actors. And the prime minister does happen to be a right-wing nationalist populist guy. There are some in this country who would say, we just elected the same. You know, some of this is a matter of opinion. Is every right-wing politician a neo-Nazi? I don't think so. Is every right-wing politician a virulent anti-Semite? I don't think so. Were there ever Hungarians, for example, who were anti-Semites? Of course. Have there ever been Americans who were anti-Semites? Of course. So I don't see a clear justification for calling every right-wing politician in Europe an anti-Semite or a neo-Nazi or the next Hitler. I just think that's unfair. It's like painting them all with the same brush, and they're products of different political cultures. But one thing they do have in common, and these parties in general have in common, the extreme right parties and the strong nationalist populist parties in Europe do better in times of economic distress, when the unemployment rate is high, when people have negative feelings about their future prospects, when inflation is high. I mean, that's what brought Hitler to power in the first place. If you want to oversimplify, there was hyperinflation in Germany and a huge sense of despair and hopelessness.
Wheelbarrows full of marks to buy anything. Right.
Right. So, in times of economic distress, and much of Europe has been in economic distress since the big recession in 2008, they've recovered much more slowly and unsteadily than we have. So it's not surprising to any student of history that the far-right parties are doing better all over the continent. But are they a major threat? Are they based on xenophobia, anti-Semitism, whatever? I don't think so. They're based on, we're going to take better care of you. We're going to create more jobs. We're going to create more prosperity. And there may or may not be a real plan. And it may or may not have anything to do with foreigners or minority groups or women or Jews. It simply, we're going to take better care of you. We're going to fix the economy. And people vote for these guys. When Le Pen, the father of the current Le Pen, first ran for president in France, he was laughed off as a comic footnote. People assumed he'd get 2 or 3%. In the first round of the presidentials, he got 16.5%, which a shot astounded all the observers of the French political scene. So it can happen anywhere. Does that mean that the country is anti-Semitic? No. Does that mean the country is going to be run by Nazis? No, absolutely not. I want to assure you and your listeners that this is sensationalism and, you know, taking being overly worried and overly protective to a whole new level.
And you know, the truth is it might apply even here. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome Arshin Shinim, Bar, and Leah, who are here to talk, to kind of reflect on their experience. You guys have been here a third of your time now, 4 months. Tell us your most surprising experiences in America, in the American Jewish community, and your best experience here representing not just the Weintraub Israel Center, but really representing Israel here in Tucson.
Well, so at least for me, I think the most the best experience I've ever had is to come inside the JCC room, and I play with them, and I play when I do songs with them, and they all come and hug me, and they say, oh, it's Bar, he plays songs for us, and it just warms my heart every time I see them. It's so, just
and that's
really,
the preschool kids.
Yeah, the ECE kids.
You mean that's
kids.
Better than being here on Too Jewish?
Well, you know, I couldn't say it sounded too much of sucking
that's
up to you, but...
I know it would be too much sucking up, and I'm not going to hug your legs, so that's okay.
All right.
And Leah, what's your favorite experience so far?
Just like Bar said, I think the fact that the kid could make connection with us and, you know, like actually appreciate us and see us as like a role model, even though we're just 18, but they are like so, they look up to us. But other than that, I think like me being exposed to other ways to be Jewish, because I was raised Orthodox and in a very... specific way to do stuff, and I think that coming to Tucson and see so many different things and wonderful things that I never saw and I never knew about, I think that's the biggest present I got.
You know, part of what you guys are doing, and I probably don't have to tell you that or even our listeners, but is representing Israel so beautifully in the community and teaching young people about what Israel's like and what Israelis are like, and they're great positive role models. But part of this is also, you, as you said, Leah, and learning about what the American Jewish community is and how we have things to teach each other, which I think not everybody understands. What responses have you had about Israel? What positive responses, what more challenging responses have you had in the time that you've been here, both of you?
We got a lot of questions, a lot of stuff about, because, you know, we learn about them and they learn about us. And I think I got a lot of questions about me living next to the Gaza Strip and me being raised Orthodox, and about the Ethiopian communities, because there are people who didn't meet Ethiopian Jew in their life. So I see it as a big shlichot to explain and, you know, from first like they heard from me and not from the media or book or a newspaper or something like that. So.
Like a real person who does.
Yeah, like knows? The real, like the truth. So.
Bar?
Well, yeah, I think that's why we're here. We came here not because, you know, Israel is all over the news 24/7. You can look at what do you think about Israel, what the media says about it anytime. But actually a person who comes here, which isn't a part of, you know, explaining Israel, and he comes to make an experience and to show you what Israel is from his eyes and from our eyes, which we are, you know, only 18, so we are still pure of heart, and we're not in the politics, just like
not anymore.
That's I don't know how much. Do we want a little more confessional here? This is getting good.
Yeah, and it's important, I think, because also when we come back to Israel, we also tell all the people in Israel how it is to live in America, in a Jewish society in America, which is not less important in our opinion.
Absolutely.
Both, I think.
Thanks so much, guys, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Good morning.
And nearly Chag Sameach. Happy
yes.
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah's late this year, which is great. I love it when it's late, personally.
Or December's early, depending on how you look at it.
I guess, yes.
So we think of this as a giving time of year, although giving presents on Hanukkah doesn't have as long a tradition. The notion of giving Hanukkah gelt goes back probably to the Middle Ages, certainly to Eastern Europe. In addition to giving presents to the people we care about, it's also a really good time to think about tzedakah, which has been our theme for a while,
right,
in the broader sense.
Yes. So the season of giving and, you know, talking about going beyond giving what you might think of as the fun stuff. You know, who doesn't like those things? But also at this time of year, people turn their minds to the kind of the end of the year ledger and are thinking about charitable giving as well. So there's a lot of giving that goes beyond the presents and those kinds of things that happen at this time of year.
So when people think about their values, you know, and people like to give to all kinds of causes, how about Jewish education?
Absolutely. What a great cause, right? And there are so many ways to do that, whether or not you're looking towards a donation for a religious school or an organization like the Tucson Hebrew Academy, right? We have an organization called JETCO. You can look up online, jetco.org. And it's a great way to take money that's not even really a gift. It's money that will go to the state for state taxes, and you can redirect it to the Tucson Hebrew Academy or the Anshai Israel kindergarten program.
Or any other good Jewish educational purpose that you can think of.
There's no end to opportunities for giving, right? We have the Jewish Foundation, which helps families and individuals channel their gifts, but there are all kinds of agencies of worthy
synagogues
cause.
Synagogues all kinds
in town.
Of things. Yep. I want to add a point about that, which I think is really important. We talk about teaching our kids about tzedakah, but the best way to teach remains to model. So when you are talking to kids about how to do and how to give, you know that they have to talk to their parents about how to make that process happen. Do you find that there's kind of a carry-up process too?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's that the adage that one mitzvah begets another mitzvah. So giving it inspires giving. And when kiddo is asking, you know, mom and dad in the car for, can I have a quarter so I can put it in the tzedakah box? That has a resonating effect. So I think there's definitely some reciprocation that happens there.
I certainly hope so. John, Chanukah Sameach.
Chanukah Sameach, Chag Sameach. Wishing everybody the best.
When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A woman walks into the post office to buy stamps for Hanukkah cards. She says to the clerk, "May I have 50 Hanukkah stamps, please?" "What denomination?" asks the clerk. The woman answers, "Oy vey, my God, it's come to this. Okay, give me 6 Orthodox, 12 Conservative, and 32 Reform stamps." That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature of Two Jewish Just for You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Growing up, my mom used to swear she had 4 only children. A positive interpretation of that was she felt my siblings and I were treated as though we were each truly unique. Every one of us had distinct personalities and preferences, and she and my dad had parented us as though we were all equally precious to them. The less warm and fuzzy understanding is that we were so demanding, each of us required the parental attention an only child should have had. Anyway, raising children, parenting styles, and the danger of parenting poorly are a very important part of the book of Genesis. By the time we reach this week's portion of Vayeshev, we have had vivid examples of the disastrous consequences preferential parenting can cause a family. Abraham, in part because of his wife Sarah, favors his younger son Isaac over his eldest son Ishmael, and the results of that rejection are still felt in the Middle East. Isaac prefers his elder son Esau to his twin brother Jacob, but his wife Rebekah likes Jacob better. The results of their cross manipulation spell conflict and a 20-year exile for Jacob. And now in Vayeshev, we come to Jacob's own cataclysmically poor parenting of his large brood of 12 sons and a daughter. In particular, we meet Joseph. Joseph is one of the truly spectacular figures in the whole Bible. He'll be the principal character of the last 4 weekly portions in Genesis, and his story has been called the first truly modern piece of literature. It's a great tale, only partly about failed parenting and sibling rivalry. The Joseph story begins with a bang in this week's portion. Jacob's beloved wife, Rachel, has died in childbirth, giving birth to the 12th and final Jacobean son, Benjamin. In a pained overcompensation for the loss of Rachel, Jacob spoils the older son, Joseph, giving him a famous coat of many colors, and then using him as a tattletale spy on his older, tougher brothers. The brothers' revenge comes swiftly. They capture Joseph and sell him into slavery in Egypt, then tell their father a wild animal has killed him. After adventures that demonstrate Joseph's virtue and spectacularly bad luck at first, this week's portion ends with Joseph in an Egyptian prison, Jacob mourning up in Canaan and all hope seemingly lost. The eventual message of the Joseph story is that God's plan will work, but that we aren't always party as to why or when. But a second message is even more important. Our children are all precious. Favoring the good one does no one any good. Treating each with love, as though, in fact, each of our children was truly an only child in receiving our love, well, that's the Jewish way to parent successfully. Perhaps, in really good families, we are all only children. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, the delightful storyteller Joel Ben-Izzi, will tell us how he overcame personal trauma to become a best-selling author, why everyone should now have dreidels on the brain. Find out when we return here on To Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary. Our brothers,
Isur Danielovich Dembski turned 100 years old last week, but you should know him better by his screen name, Kirk Douglas. He was Spartacus and Vincent van Gogh in Lust for Life and a star for decades. He is a film actor of great energy, courage, and talent, a three-time Oscar nominee for Best Actor, recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom and an Oscar for Lifetime Achievement, a successful producer, director, and author. Kirk Douglas appeared in more than 100 movies. He has written 10 books, novels, and memoirs. In addition to his iconic roles in dramas, history epics, and westerns, Douglas is the last surviving great star of the golden age of Hollywood. He was also one of the first stars to break with the studio system and form his own successful production company. And perhaps most importantly, Kirk Douglas helped break the Hollywood blacklist by having screenwriter Dalton Trumbo write Spartacus with an official on-screen credit.
I'm Spartacus!
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 Kirk Douglas started out in a very poor Orthodox Jewish immigrant family in Amsterdam, New York, upstate. My father, who had been a horse trader in Russia, got himself a horse and a wagon and became a ragman, buying old rags, pieces of metal, and junk for pennies, nickels, and dimes. Even on Eagle Street, in the poorest section of town where all the families were struggling, the ragman was on the lowest rung of the ladder, and I was the ragman's son. Early on, Douglas decided that acting was what he wanted to do. After serving in the Navy for 3 years during World War II, he eventually found his way to New York, acting in plays. An early acting friend was a very young, up-and-coming Jewish actress, Lauren Bacall. Douglas had no money at all. He worked about 40 different jobs before he got his first paying role. The cleft chin Kirk Douglas soon became a star. His intensity and intelligence and power on the screen, as well as his good looks and athleticism, helped him quickly ascend to the Hollywood firmament. Although Jewish, for many years, he was not religious. "Judaism and I parted ways a long time ago," he said, "when I was a poor kid growing up in Amsterdam, New York. Back then, I was pretty good in cheder, so the Jews of our community thought they would do a wonderful thing and collect enough money to send me to a yeshiva to become a rabbi. Holy Moses, that scared the hell out of me," says Kirk Douglas. "I didn't want to be a rabbi. I wanted to be an actor. Believe me, the members of the Sons of Israel were persistent. I had nightmares, wearing long payas and a black hat. I had to work very hard to get out of it, but it took me a long time to learn that you don't have to be a rabbi to be a Jew." After a stroke and a near-death helicopter crash, Kirk Douglas returned to his Judaism with enthusiasm, had a second bar mitzvah at age 83, and wrote a book about his return to his religious roots. His son, acting icon Michael Douglas, has similarly come back to his own Jewish identity, and Kirk Douglas has been a very active and committed philanthropist for a variety of important causes, including some Jewish ones. Mazel tov to Kirk Douglas on his 100th birthday. May he continue going strong till 120. So, everyone thinks Jews value education more than anything. Well, everyone might be right. Jews are the world's most educated religious group, with an average of more than 13 years of formal schooling, according to a new study at the Pew Research Center that was released last week. Jews worldwide have 4 years more schooling on average than the next most educated group. That's Christians, who average about 9 years. Muslims and Hindus are the least educated religious groups, each with about 5.5 years of formal schooling. The global average is less than 8 years. Jews led the groups in several other categories. Jewish men and women have the smallest average gap in years of formal schooling at zero. Hindu women, on the other extreme, trail men by almost 3 years. Jews were the most educated from 55 to 74 years old. 61% of Jews have at least some post-high school education. The global average is just 14%. And 99% of Jews, basically all, have had formal schooling. Among Jews worldwide, in the 25 to 34-year-old group, women are more educated than men. Jewish women in that age group have more than 14 years of formal schooling on average. Nearly 70% have attended some form of college. Jewish men, 25 to 34 years old, have an average of 13.5 years of formal schooling. 57% have had some college. While 81% of Jewish men aged 55 to 74 in America have had higher education, that number drops to just 65% among those aged 25 to 34. Apparently, we're trending down. Pew attributes that decline to the growth of America's Orthodox Jewish population, which attains formal secular education at lower rates than non-Orthodox Jews. And American Jews have the highest rate of higher education, 75% overall, an average of almost 15 years of schooling. Jewish Israelis have about 12 years of schooling, and 46% have had some college. Jews in Israel have far more education on average than Muslim Israelis, though the gap is narrowing. Among the oldest Jews and Muslims, there's a nearly six-year gap. Among Jews and Muslims aged 25 to 34 years old, the gap shrinks to just 3.7 years in Israel. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, storyteller Joel Ben-Izzi. Set off around the globe after graduating from Stanford to tell stories, gather them and tell them. He has performed and led workshops in a wide variety of countries all over the globe, produced six recorded collections of his stories, which have won awards from Parents' Choice Foundation and a variety of others. He's also one of the nation's most sought-after story consultants. He fixes stories for you. His first book was the highly acclaimed memoir, The Beggar King and the Secret of Happiness, which has now been published in, let's say, 18 languages.
Let's go for 18.
I like those 18s. And has been developed in other media as well. He has a new book out called Dreidels on the Brain, which is a wonderful and delightful collection of stories related to Hanukkah. Good time of year to talk about that. I want to take a step back, though. Tell us how you became an author instead of a storyteller.
Well, that kind of goes to the story I tell in my first book, The Beggar King and the Secret of Happiness. As a kid, I just loved books and thought I would be an author, but as someone sitting trying to write the great American short story, I found that what came out of my typewriter at the time was drivel. And through a long series of adventures, I kind of fell backwards into being a storyteller and designed a degree around it at college and went off traveling the world around it. And I think I might have gone on doing that and that alone, which was going quite well, had my own story not taken a particular twist, which is I found I had thyroid cancer. And, of course, thyroid cancer is a treatable form of cancer. It's considered a good cancer. And you can't see the air quotes on the radio, but they are a good cancer. Good cancer is like jumbo shrimp. It's like, what are we talking about? But in my case, it's considered treatable because they remove the thyroid,
right,
and then you go on living and breathing. But the complication in my case was that I woke up from surgery, and I said to the doctor, he said, oh, I wouldn't worry. What do you mean? He said, oh, the nerve is in shock. Give it a couple weeks, maybe a month. And after 2 weeks, I said, doctor, it's been 2 weeks. I can't talk. He said, you know, it could be a month. And after a month, I said, doctor, it's been a month. He said, I wouldn't worry. It could be 2 months. And after 2 months, I said, doctor, 2 months. He said, oh, if it's 2 months, this is permanent. You won't be able to speak again.
Oh, my God.
I hope this doesn't affect your work. So that set me off on a journey, and, we Jews go on journeys, usually that we don't intend to take. We've been on many of them. So this was a journey of learning to accept the fact that I would never speak again, and to actually come to see it as a blessing. And so that's the story I tell in the first book, but in the course of that, over that time, I began to write. And it was actually just after my voice returned, which was something of a miracle in itself.
How long did it take before your voice came back?
It was a year and a half.
Oh my God!
And it was long gone, and I was destined to be mute. And I won't tell the whole story because that's
yeah, you got to sell the book.
That's right. So that's in the book. But afterwards, I began to write, and I discovered a writing voice that had been informed by many years of traveling and telling stories. So that's how I went from storyteller to author, but I still tell stories.
That's a great story in itself, and by the way, a wonderful book. One of the really delightful aspects of Dreidels on the Brain, your new book, besides the fact that it's almost Hanukkah and it's a perfect time to get that, and it makes a wonderful Hanukkah gift, and that plug comes
from your lips.
Yeah. to their pockets, as the
to various online and local bookstores.
Exactly, to their Amazon clicks.
That's right.
But you have such a wonderful way of thinking about Jewish in a really irreverent and refreshing, but somehow still respectful way. For example, you talk about the game of dreidel. You said nobody can agree on the rules. That's how you know it's a Jewish game.
That's very true. I mean, I think we Jews wrestle and we argue with God and we debate. We just don't take it straight. And one of the things I do in the book is I'm exploring Hanukkah and I'm saying it's such a Jewish holiday we can't even figure out how to spell it. And I say I'm going to spell it a different way each time it appears in this book, until I find the right one. And I would offer this as a contest for your two Jewish listeners. If they buy the book and read it, they can email me at joel@storypage and tell me how many different ways I've spelled Hanukkah. I'll say this, it's more than 50 throughout the book.
And I think some of them have never been used before, which is hard to achieve.
You know what else was hard to achieve? I had to make each one different. And there was no copy editor at Dial Books, which is part of Penguin Random House, which really should be called Random Penguin House. No, it's actually, it should be called, yeah, Random Penguin House, a nice image for a publisher.
I like that Random Penguin House. That's
great.
They didn't
go for it. I don't know what's with them. But so I had to go through and do the proofing and make sure that each one was spelled differently, which was really a task. So I know exactly how many there are. If someone reads the book and then emails me at joel@storypage.com, the first five of your listeners who do that, I will send them a gift, which is my Hanukkah storytelling CD called Lights and Laughter, Joel Ben-Ezi Spins Hanukkah Tales.
That's great. That's a wonderful offer. I'm going to start counting right now.
That's right. I suggest, by the way, because it could be distracting, people might read the book first and then read it a second time and count.
That's right, because otherwise you miss all the flavor, of which are really delicious. I don't know if they're as delicious as latkes, but they're delicious stories. But I have to tell you a story. We had a secretary at the temple, and right, the rabbi, and she was very upset one day. She said, "You keep spelling Hanukkah in different ways. How can you call yourself a synagogue if you don't know the right way to spell it?" She was very angry. And I said, "Well, it's very simple. It's Chet Nun Kaf Hey, and, you know, that ought to work." Somehow that she didn't find that amusing.
It's like the classic story of the rabbi coming to audition at the synagogue, and he's sitting there in the service, and there comes a shema, and he doesn't know if he stands or sits, so he decides to stand, and someone comes and says, "Excuse me, Rabbi, it's in our congregation's tradition to sit during the Shema." He says, "Okay, I remember." Next time he sits, and he says, "Excuse me, in our congregation, it's a tradition to stand during the Shema and then sit during the Ve'ahavta." And it keeps changing on him, and finally he turns up and he says, "You are driving me crazy." And they all say, "That's our tradition."
Yes, I love that joke. By the way, you can always tell if you're telling a Jew a joke because he'll then tell you, "No, I know a better way to tell the same joke." I think that's why being a storyteller is very courageous, because you have to have your own stories, because if you're telling stories other people know, they're always going to correct you.
You know what? Having your own stories doesn't actually change that. They still correct you. They say, "No, that's not how it happened."
You also talk about, you know, in this dreidels on the braid, I want to talk about dreidels just a little more. You mention, of course, the tradition that says that the whole game of dreidel was invented so Jews could study Neis Gadol HaYasham, a great miracle happened there, and we could learn the story of Hanukkah when we were prevented from learning Torah. And then you say, other people have toys they play with in secret to avoid studying. Jews have toys we pretend to play with in public so we can study in secret. I just love it.
Oh, thank you. It was, you know, it was fun to capture this voice of a 12-year-old kid, hence the title Kvetcher in the Rye, or the other working title was Short Boy's Complaint, which my editor also didn't think would go.
I think Philip Roth would have sued you.
That's all I needed, to be sued by somebody else. Oh, yeah. So, but what it was to try to capture that sense of being 12, and of really wanting something to believe in. You know, because I was doing magic shows at the time. I was the nerdiest of nerdy 12-year-olds, long before anybody imagined being nerdy could be cool or even tolerable. And I was in the book jacket cover. I can send it to you for your website too.
There's a
picture of me just as a super nerd, and almost too embarrassed to live. But magic was my thing. But really, sort of wanting this miracle, because when you're at 12, I think you're deciding. You say, all right, I'm about to enter adulthood. Next year is supposed to be my bar mitzvah. And there's a whole riff about not becoming bar mitzvahed. There's a whole rant that the Cantor Grubnitz, I call him. I changed his
name. Yeah, he sounds just terrible, by the way.
Yeah, he was not pleasant.
I will not ask you who it was. Having been a cantor in Los Angeles, I knew all of them in that period. But we'll leave him anonymous for now.
We will do that. But there was a way that I really wanted something to hold on to, sort of jumping from childhood to adulthood. Or I could say I'll become an adult and say there's no magic, there's no miracles, it's really just a sham, and I'll live with that. And so that's what, you know, that's sort of what drives the story, is that it takes place over the 8 nights of Hanukkah, 1971. And the gambit I've made with the god is to say, all right, I just want one miracle, one that I can hold on to by the time the last candles burn down. That's all I ask for, is just that. And my life unravels from there. You know, when it comes to dreidel, God does not play fair. In fact, when it comes to most anything, God just doesn't play fair. But it is surprising. And so that's why I mentioned earlier that there was a story from that particular time that it's a story about an orange. And if you look at the cover of the book, there's an orange right in front of the boy's face on the cover. In a ripoff from a Magritte painting.
Yeah, but it's a very cool ripoff, by the way. I love the Magritte painting, but I actually like this one too. So go ahead.
So there was just this one story, which, as I say, came to me when I was 12. And it was one of those stories that I've always been somebody who hears a story and then turns around and tells it. You're probably the same way. But this one, I thought, you know, this is a treasure. I want to wait until the right time to tell it. And that was 45 years ago. But, you know, stories have their own timeline. They work in their own way. And something inside me, plus my wife's subtle urging, said, you know, maybe this is time to tell that story. Maybe there's something about this one story of finding light within the darkness that'll somehow fit. And somehow Hanukkah 2016 seems to be a good time for a story about light within the darkness.
It's addictive. It's a wonderful book. Besides finding it where all books are found, where can people go to find out more about you and your storytelling and your books?
Well, my website is being reconstructed now, but should be up and running around the time this book, around Hanukkah.
Right.
So that's storypage.com. And then I have a Facebook author page. If you look at Joel Ben Izzy Author, you can go to Facebook author page and like it, and then there's all sorts of photos and some the contest details of count how many Hanukkahs are in the book and dreidels on the brain. So they can look at either of those places.
Joel, thanks for a great visit. Chag Hanukkah Sameach. We'll have to do it again.
I will look forward to it. Chag Hanukkah Sameach to you and all your listeners.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be best-selling author Julia Dahl, discussing her Rebecca Rubin mystery crime novel, The Invisible City. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website and friend us on Facebook.
Our playout this morning on Two Jewish comes as part of our pre-Hanukkah musical preview. It's from the Maccabees and their Hanukkah version of the song Shine, a parody of British singer Ellie Goulding's Burn. By the way, Ellie Goulding's dad is Jewish. Hanukkah's coming up Saturday night. Don't miss it. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a wonderful start to Hanukkah. A Chag Hanukkah Sameach, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Because we got the fire, fire, fire. Yeah, we got the fire, fire, fire.
We don't have to worry about nothing, 'cause we got the fire, and we burn it 8 nights of something. They're gonna see us from outer space,
outer space.
Light it up, they're burning bright for the human race, human race.
When the lights turn down,
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.